Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
All right, I'm back with you with another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. And today is April 14th, 2014, because I know I didn't say that in my first show. And I thought we were going to be able to jump into this show without actually getting disconnected, but obviously I was wrong. But anyhow, I'm on the line with Marnie Posh, who will be discussing about the adoption process, taking you through all the steps, even though it may seem like it's a hard process to get through. She's here to answer your questions. So if you have any, please do call in at 347-426-3751. Marnie, how are we doing today?
Good, good. I'm so glad to finally have a chance to speak with you. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm glad, too. And see, when I scheduled, I wasn't thinking that I had you both scheduled, and then I had another guest who I had to reschedule because when I was interviewing her, my computer had shut down, so I was thinking, I said, okay, I have everything intact. I don't have a schedule on the same day, and I had forgot that I had you and Ron scheduled on the same time. That was I'm always trying to avoid, so I do apologize about that.
It's not a problem. I understand you are one of the most popular women in town, so it's all good.
Thank you, Ms. Marnie. So, Ms. Marnie, give us a little bit about your background, how you got into adoption.
Okay, well, I'm an adoptive mom and, well, also a biological mother, but I don't really see the difference between the two. My oldest daughter's 5, and my youngest is now 3, and we decided to adopt because I had secondary infertility, but we've had many positive adoption stories in our lives. So it was really never even gave it a second thought. Adoption was always a course we wanted to explore. And we did decide to adopt transracially. So our daughter is a different ethnicity than my husband and I. And we are also in a wide open adoption, which means in our case that we have frequent contact, maybe once every 4 or 5 months, whenever we have time to visit with my daughter's biological mom. And, so through my experience, I wanted to help families that were looking into the domestic adoption process. Sometimes there's so much information out there that it can almost be a detriment to families. So I really wanted to help them navigate the domestic process as smoothly as possible with as much information that is necessary to complete their adoption. And I love it, and it's a blessing to be able to help families, you know, complete their family.
It is, but is it hard, Marnie, when you're doing adoption? Do you just give up all your legal rights? I was thinking if the biological parent give up maybe their child to adopt a family, do they actually give up all their legal rights? They cannot see the child anymore?
Right. Well, so what happens is when a biological mother or biological mother and father decide to place the child for adoption, they do terminate all their legal rights. Typically the adoptive parents will receive a new birth certificate that states they are the parents to their child. As far as whether you choose to see or continue to have a relationship with the biological parents, that's completely up to the adoptive parents. Back in the old days, it was closed adoptions were the norm, and that is where the adoptive parents knew nothing about the biological parents, and the biological parents knew nothing about the adoptive parents. Now, we've kind of shifted away from that because we've seen through studies that that's not in the best interest of the adoptive child, and it's also not in the best interest of the biological parents. What we see now more common are what's known as semi-open adoptions, and that's where the adoptive parents or parents agree to send letters and pictures maybe once a year to the attorney's office or the agency, at which point the biological parents can pick up the letters and see how their child is growing through over the years. So there's still no direct contact, but at least in this case, you know, the biological parents can know that they made the right choice for their child and that their child is thriving, and they can still feel somewhat connected to them, even if they aren't speaking to them or having a direct relationship.
Oh, that has to be really hard. I mean, and that's a strong decision that you have to actually sit down and really think about, because once it's done, and there's no retracting that back. So what brought you and your husband, I would like to know, what actually brought you and your husband to really consider adoption?
Well, we've always had positive experience with adoption growing up. Scott's stepbrother was adopted. One of my close friends growing up, she was adopted. So it wasn't really anything new to us. But after I went through secondary infertility, you know, we could have gone through fertility treatments, but at that point I was really done. I, you know, had tried for 2 years to get pregnant again, constantly, you know, taking temperatures, going and, you know, every month saying, oh my God, is this going to be the month? I didn't want to do that to myself anymore. I didn't want to play any more guessing games. And the thing with adoption is whether it takes, you know, 1 month, 2 years, or 5 years, in the end, you know that you will come home with a child. Whereas with fertility treatments, you know, you try and it still might not be successful. So, you know, I was ready to put my energy and my efforts into something that I knew would complete my family.
But there's a lot that you really have to consider before determining whether you're ready to adopt, like maybe understanding, well, I think you should understand what goes into being an adoptive parent, understand that you got to consider responsibility of a parent, someone else's child. How would somebody really know if they are ready to adopt, Marnie?
Well, I think emotionally you need to look at where you are in your life. If you're coming off of infertility, you'll really want to make sure that you've healed from it. And everybody's different. Some people can jump right from infertility treatments or fertility treatments into adoption. Some families need to take a break for, you know, 6 months, a year, and say, okay, you know what, this wasn't successful for me. I've grieved that loss, and now I'm ready to move on. And the first step that a family would need in order to start with adoption is called a home study. And that is when a social worker would come into your home and sit down with you, or if you're adopting with your partner, you and your partner, and ask questions like, how did you come to adoption? How have you educated yourself about it? They'll look at your house and make sure, you know, that it's provides adequate needs for a child. And that's not to say that your house has to have 10 bedrooms. You can rent and adopt. You can have a two-bedroom home and adopt. But what they want to make sure is that your house is not unsafe. And that's really just to protect the child that you would be bringing into your home. They'll look at your financial stability. And again, that's not to say that you have to have a set income to adopt, but it is to say that if you have 10 BMWs outside but you can't afford your electric bill, well, then they're going to look and say, something's a little wrong with that picture. But and they also do security clearances as well to make sure you don't have a criminal past. And that's not to say that if you had a DUI when you were 20, that's going to prevent you from adopting. But if you have any sort of sexual crimes in your past or of violence towards women, then that could prevent you, and in most cases will prevent you from being able to adopt. But the home study is the first official step in starting to adopt.
Now, how soon did you try to conceive after your first child?
Let's see. Trying to think back that far. I would say that I was finally able to convince my husband to try again when she was around a year, I guess. So it was probably less than 2 years that we tried before we started the adoption process. And the adoption process happened really fast for us. We completed our home study and signed up with our agency in September, and we had our first match in November where the mother decided to parent, and then in January our daughter was born. So it was really from September to January that was how long it took us to bring home our daughter.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're actually adopting, do you have you make that decision on where you want to adopt from, if you want to do across seas or locally?
Correct. So international adoption is a whole another ball of wax, so to speak, and I don't work with families who are choosing international adoption simply because that's not my area of familiarity. But if you choose to adopt domestically, you have two options. The first is foster care and foster to adopt, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But a lot of the families that I'm working with are looking to adopt newborns to age one. And you certainly can adopt that age through the foster care system, but it's not as common is my understanding. But the foster to adopt program is certainly the least expensive option and, you know, probably the most meaningful if you have a family that's ready to go through that process. What I do is work with families who typically want to adopt newborns, although I'm seeing families now that are open to 5 and 6 year olds. And I primarily work in Florida. Florida has amazing laws for the adoptive parents. And but if they wish to go to additional states throughout the United States, you're more than welcome to. You have to look at the laws for each state, and I'm, you know, not an attorney, so I can't give you an expert opinion on that. But if I'm in Florida, I can adopt a child that was born in Arizona. You know, I could adopt a child that was born in California. It's just a certain, you know, legally a few other things would have to work out to do so. But if you're looking to adopt a newborn through private or agency adoption in the United States, you can adopt anywhere within the country, typically.
And I know most people think sometimes when you're adopting older kids, it seems crazy, but most people said it really rocks, especially when at the age of 5 and 6, that's really the best part to start adopting. They really, most people say they love it. It's a blessing in disguise for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if my husband and I were to adopt again, I would love to adopt an older child. I mean, right now we're okay with two, and my husband always looks like he wants to run out of the room when I mention adopting or having another child. But I think down the road we would like to have, you know, adopt an older child. And that's a whole nother set of, you know, experiences and preparation that you would need to do for an older child. But there's a great need. And, an even bigger need right now is looking for African-American families that want to adopt even newborns. You know, the agencies and attorneys I work with are always asking me for families because the expecting moms that are coming in are looking specifically for African-American families. And, I have a few couples that I've worked with, but I've not had as many that fulfill the need, so.
But was it ever an endeavor that affected the whole family, Marnie, when you brought home a new child? Did everyone focus on that new child and felt that maybe you're neglecting the other one? Because sometimes most people have said that too. Oh, I bring a new baby home, everybody focuses on that one, but then they forget that I have these other children as well. I may forget that I have these others because you're focusing on just that newborn at that point.
You know, I hear a lot of families have that issue, and I am so incredibly blessed that my five-year-old is a very take-it-as-it-comes personality. She was so excited to be a sister. When we went to meet our daughter for the first time, she came with us, and we went to the hotel the night before, and she ran through the hotel room going, "Where's my sister?" And we had to tell her that her sister wasn't there yet, and she threw a fit. And so, you know, she's been tied, you know, to my youngest daughter from day one. They share a room now. You know, she wants to share a bed with her on occasion. They're two little thick as thieves, the two of them are. So we really lucked out, and there wasn't really a competition at all. She just she really adjusted well. But that's not to say that everyone has that experience. So
exactly, because that part would be, well, my daughters, I was thinking of the same thing when they said, "Mom, you need to have another child." And I'm like, just say that now to it. Probably I should come home, so I don't know what your real reactions will be.
Yeah, and it's not one of those things you can test out either. It's like once the baby's there, you know, it's part of your family. So no test run with that one.
But how come you never went through a surrogate mother?
You know, I don't think it ever really crossed my mind to do that. You know, it just wasn't something that ever occurred to me. I looked at adoption as, you know, we had love to give. We wanted to expand our family. And, you know, if a young mother who, or I guess it's not relegated to a young mother, but if a woman, you know, was in a situation where she couldn't parent and desperately needed, you know, a family to care for her child, that was just the route that we wanted to take. We wanted to open ourselves up to that opportunity, and that's how our daughter found our way to it. But, you know, many people use surrogates, and it works for them. It just really wasn't anything that we considered.
Okay. And I'm also thinking at the same time, you have to be as much as you have to be careful when you're looking for a child through the adoption process, you have to be careful that way too, because, I mean, you got to keep check up on them, making sure they're not doing any harmful injuries to themselves to affect the baby.
Right. And, you know, when I think there's a big myth in the domestic adoption process that, you know, people are always adopting children that have been exposed to substances. And that's not true. I mean, it certainly does happen, but it's up to the adoptive parents what they're willing to open their heart to. And, you know, quite frankly, when part of the services I offer are education, and when, you know, you have a couple that initially comes in and they say, "Well, I know I wouldn't smoke during pregnancy. I wouldn't, you know, do X, Y, Z. So obviously I don't want to open myself up to any of the risks associated to that." But then when you have them talk to their doctor and they talk to, you know, nurses or their gynecologist, they realize that they don't have to be as afraid of that as they were initially. But that being said, if an adoptive family comes to me and they say, "I do not want a biological mother that has used any illegal substances or cigarettes or alcohol," that's absolutely fine. You know, they might wait possibly a little bit longer, depending on the circumstances, but those situations out there exist, and not every biological parent that chooses to place their child for adoption does participates in activities that are harmful to her health and the baby's health.
Yeah, I was reading a story about a surrogate mother, and obviously it wasn't a happy story for her, but she was actually having the baby for another couple, and come to find out the baby had cleft palate and some other dysfunctions going on, some of disabilities, and she wanted to keep the baby, but I guess they had more control over it now, so they wanted to end up suing her because they didn't want it like that. They actually wanted her to abort the baby.
Yeah, and I've heard of that case. Again, you know, it comes down to the not so warm and fuzzies of legalities and lawsuits and everything else. But I feel strongly for both the surrogate and the parents in that situation. And you know, I don't really think there's an easy way out of that situation that would occur. You know.
But what are really some things that parents who are trying to adopt need to really actually consider?
Let's see. The first thing I would say is to make sure your home study is done and completed. That's going to be the first step in any situation. The second thing is to make sure that you are working with people that you trust, that you do background searches on any agency or attorney, that you really look at who you are working with, because you know, there are unethical people out there. You want to make sure that they're treating the expecting parents with fairness and dignity, and they're not taking advantage of anyone. And you know, it just comes with taking your time and doing research and making sure you know what adoption entity you are working with. I would also say that, you know, really try to read up on the subject. I have some books on my website that I recommend. You know, you want to make sure that you really know, before you say, no, I'm not open to XYZ, really know why it is you're not open to that, whether it's communication with the biological parents or drug exposures. You know, just make sure that you can really defend what your choice is, so that way you're 100% certain when you're going into it. And you know, it's not an easy journey emotionally. It's a roller coaster, and you kind of have to brace yourself for it. But you know, the outcome in the end is going to result in a family that's completed. And you know, I wouldn't trade any of the sad times that we went, you know, for my daughter at all. You know, it's the way it was supposed to be, and my family is all the more happier for it. So,
yeah, and I do. I agree with every bit of it. You got to go in with your eyes wide open and just gather every piece of information. You got to make sure of the health information, because you encounter things like that. We encounter with our own children when we have them, and it's hard because adopted children aren't returnable, at least not while having that heartbreak. And some people have tried to do that, because I heard about some who adopt international children, and they'll try to return them, and it's not so easy. You just don't throw them back like they're a dog on the street. Okay, here you go. Get them back. They got issues. I don't need them. So that's something that you have to really sit down and really consider. What made you go ahead, Marnie. Go ahead.
No. In regards to that, and that's something that, you know, when I work with families, if they're open to adopting older children, then we look at attachment and everything, and even with newborns, you know. Mothers sometimes expect that the second they hold their child that they're going to feel this instantaneous, you know, bond. And it does happen, but sometimes it's something that needs to grow. And, you know, quite frankly, that's something that happens whether your child is biologically yours or adopted. You know, there are mothers that don't connect right away when they have their own children. And it's something that, you know, you grow, you nurture, and you love, and it does come. But don't set such high expectations on yourself and on your child that everything's going to be, you know, a fairy tale the second that your child is placed in your arms. You want to, you know, it certainly can happen, but if it doesn't, then just enjoy the time you have and let it grow naturally.
Exactly. And what I was going to ask, what made you decide to complete your family domestically?
Oddly enough, we started with international. We were going to adopt through internationally, possibly through Rwanda was one of the countries that we were looking at.
Yes.
And I had tried to contact a few agencies domestically, the ones that come up in your top, 10 search engines, and we were told they wouldn't work with us. It was either because we were married, we weren't married long enough, that we had a biological child, that, so on and so forth. So, I was beginning to feel discouraged that, okay, well, maybe international is the only option for us. And I happened to meet with an attorney at an agency near us and was telling her our story. And she was like, oh, no. She was like, we will work with you. She was like, just because you're hearing no from some of these agencies does not mean that there's no one out there that will work with you. And, since that time, I've now realized that there are, many, many agencies and attorneys that don't have restrictions. There's no age restriction. There's no religion restriction. There's no single versus married, no, sexuality, requirements. So that was what changed us from international to domestic, was the initial thought that no one would work with us, and then finding out that it was a lot simpler than we anticipated.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that it did work out for you, and I'm glad that you're still holding a strong family together. You're so welcome. Do agency and attorney go together? Do you really need an attorney when you're adopting?
Well, yes, you'll certainly need an attorney. The way that the domestic adoption process works are you have agencies, and an agency kind of provides everything that you need. They might have social workers that do home studies. The social workers will work with the expecting parents and provide counseling, take them to doctor's appointments, and then sometimes the agencies either have an attorney in-house, which means they already have someone that will perform the legal work for you, or they work with a reputable attorney in the area that will assist them through the termination, the finalization process. Now, you can also adopt through an adoption attorney, and they're much smaller in staff. It'll either be typically just the attorney, or it might be the attorney and an assistant, and the assistant is the one that works with the expecting parents. But they don't have the resources to work with as many families as an agency might. But both are perfectly acceptable courses to take. My theory is that you should work with as many possible entities as your budget allows, because that way you're exposed to more situations that will work for your family. But you will eventually need to cross paths with an attorney. I wouldn't even if there was a book on how to do it yourself, I would not recommend doing it, because adoption can be legally complicated, and you'll want to make sure that that you have an attorney that you can rely on and that's familiar with the adoption procedure.
Oh, okay. Now, is it true that not in all states they allow the adoption lawyers to help the adoptive parents locate and screen expecting women who will consider maybe placing their child for adoption?
The laws in every state are different. And, obviously since I'm not an attorney, it's hard for me to speak. But I do know that in some states you're not allowed to use adoption attorneys to match you with an expecting mom. In some states, you're only allowed to work with nonprofit agencies and attorneys. You can't work with for-profit agencies. In Florida, you're allowed to work with either agencies or attorneys. So it really depends case by case. And, in states where the laws aren't favorable to you, chances are you'll be able to adopt through another state. So don't think because the state you're in isn't adoption friendly that you can't go somewhere else, because chances are you can. So.
Well, see, now that's really good. But we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with Marnie Posh on the adoption process. And see, you thought it was hard. It's actually not that hard. It's just, you just have to do your homework in any other case. But we'll be back with more information from Marnie Posh. So please stay tuned in your seats and don't go anywhere.
There's only one station that will keep you happy. Blog Talk Radio. We're taking more of your calls at 347-426-3751. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
All right, we are back with Marnie Posh, and she's been talking about the process of adopting, the things that you need to consider, the reason why she completed her family domestically. Now, Marnie, going into this, did you have to match up with the child? Was there any qualifications that they considered?
Any qualifications that we needed to make, or options that we were open to?
Or that the agency needs to make, do they have to consider anything in order for you to start adopting?
It'll depend on the agency or attorney that you sign with. For instance, if you're working with a agency that has a religious background, then chances are that they will require you to submit a statement of faith, perhaps letters from your minister. Then agency itself might have requirements on the age of the adoptive parents, how many marriages you've had previously, how many biological children are in your home. Those are some things that you might see with agencies. But then when you look at attorneys, you find that some attorneys don't have any of those requirements where an agency might. Our agency did not have any of those specific requirements at that time. So.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad, I think. Supposedly, you just probably need to find the right one and make sure that you are qualified for that. Because if not, then you don't need to step in hot water that you're going to get an answer to know. But I was actually watching on the news one couple, they got approved for adopting. But then they got rejected, and they didn't know why. So one, the agency told them that they had dogs around. I think they were pit bulls. And that kind of, and it tore them apart. I was like, wow, you go in, you tell these people yes, and then all of a sudden you retract back and tell them no. Like, and the guy felt all that should have been told to him in advance, and nobody didn't tell him.
Yeah, you know, I've not heard that story. But my recommendation for, any adoptive couple, if you think that there's something that might, eliminate you from that particular agency or attorney, I would bring it up before you go forward. I don't know if the type of animal would have been at the forefront of my mind. I can now guarantee that it probably will be after hearing this. But, if you've had a medical condition, bring that up to the agency. Say, if I had this, let's say cancer. 5 years ago I had cancer. Is this going to prohibit me from adopting through your agency? Most likely they would say no. Now, if you said I currently have cancer and I'm undergoing treatment for it, they might require that you wait until treatment is completed for it. But always ask before you start, the process and working with them just to make sure that it's a good fit for you. Because, you don't want to work with someone that isn't going to be your advocate and looking to create a match for you.
Yes. And that, I will have to say I agree with all that. You just got to make sure that it's just right for you. Now, after you're approved, do you get to bring the child home immediately?
So I believe that would be a yes across the states. But, again, I'm most familiar with Florida. So in Florida, once the child is born, the biological mother would sign her rights away within 48 hours, at the 48-hour mark, at which point it is final. There's no time after that she could change her mind, unless, of course, she could prove fraud or duress, and that would be something like, I'll buy you a new car if you sign your rights. That would be fraud. But other than that sort of situation, once her rights are terminated at the appropriate time, then you're free to bring your child home. Finalization in Florida comes 90 days after birth, and that is when, your attorney will go to court. And typically the families like to go to court as well, and the judge will, say that you are now lawfully the parents of this child. So, yes, so I think that answers your question.
Okay. Now, you actually went through open adoption. What is it?
Okay, so typically adoptions nowadays are semi-open, and that means that the adoptive parents have to promise to send letters and pictures to the agency or attorney at set increments throughout the year. And then typically after the first year, it goes to once a year. Anything outside of that, you start to move towards being more open. So starting with semi-open, a family might say, okay, we're open to pictures and letters, but you know what? We're also open to meeting with the biological parents once a year. And you might go to a park or a restaurant, and they get to actually, see and talk to their biological child. And then some might say, I'll do two visits a year or three visits, or I'll do three visits before the child turns five. And that's where it starts to get a little bit more open. Now, in our case, we're fully open. I mean, you can't get more open than what we have. She's been to our house. We've been to her house.
Oh, wow.
She's been invited to come to Christmas if she wants to come to Christmas. But we didn't start there. Like, I didn't go into adoption thinking, oh, I want to have a wide open adoption. Like, it was a relationship that really built over time. She and I started communicating over email, and we had so much in common. And then we began to talk on the phone. We agreed to meet once because we actually didn't meet in the hospital. And so we met at a restaurant, and, from there I wanted to see her again. So, it just built over time, and she was a college student and is, I just found out she's going to get her master's, and, she's a good kid. Like, she's someone that I'm happy to have in my children's life, and she treats my older daughter exactly the same as she treats my my younger daughter, well, which is also her daughter. But, you know, and that's really important to me because I, you know, if I'm inviting someone into my family, they gotta love all of us, you know. So we're kind of a package deal. But don't let open adoption confuse you, you know, be confused with co-parenting, because she's not the parent. She, I guess if you look at it, she could be like, you know, an aunt that you know, distant aunt or cousin. I mean, she's not the mom and the dad. So, but she knows that and she's aware of it. And, you know, like she says, you know, her choice, the result of it was the best possible thing that could have happened out of a bad situation. And, you know, we're very lucky that she chose us to be my daughter's parents, and you know, we're lucky that, you know, she is willing to put up with our, you know, zany family. So it's a good relationship, and it you know, it has its ebbs and tides. If she's busy or something like that, you know, we might not see her for 6 months, or if we're busy, you know, but it's just a very natural relationship at this point. But it wasn't always like that. You know, it had its nervous points, you know, like when she came to our house the first time, I thought everything had to be spotless. And then like 3 months later, she was in my car and she opened the door to the car and she was like, oh my God, because it was a complete disaster. And I was like, okay, I've been lying to you. I'm actually a complete slob. So, you know, we now at this point, 3 years later, we kind of know each other, and you know, we don't have to hide anything, but it certainly had its ups and downs. So,
well, see, I like that, because see, on both hands, the birth parents and adoptive parents get a chance. You get a chance to see a real image of each other, and that trust to understand one another, it starts to develop, and there's no more fear or insecurity because, okay, I know you, you know me, and that also helps the child as well. Because then they'll say, oh, okay, this is, well, it, when it comes to that point, okay, this was my birth mother, this is who I actually look like, and it won't be a question. And then the question probably could be answered when the child gets old. Oh, okay, why was I giving up? Mother can explain that. But see, that's good. You and her have that relationship. I love that. There's no animosity against you. Oh, you got my baby, and now I don't like you.
No. And like I said, if she was a different person, if she had been incarcerated or, you know, had any sort of, you know, drug addiction, anything like that, you know, we might have handled it in a different way. You know, it might have been one of those things where we meet once a year. But so I certainly, when people ask me about open adoption, like I had one client that said, oh, yeah, we're totally for open adoption, the more open as possible. And I had to tell them, well, wait a second, let's, you know, that's great. I've never had, you know, a client that's ready to jump right into it. But you also have to make sure that the situation is going to be right for open adoption. So, you know, let's make sure that, you know, the expecting parents are someone that you want in your life on that level, and then go from there. But the other reason that open adoption is so important to me in this case is because we adopt it transracially. So our daughter is Caucasian, Puerto Rican, and African American, and so culturally, I think it's important for her to have a connection to that side, you know, of her family. So if she ever has any issues with, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm sorry, I just drew a complete blank, but connecting to that side of her culture, at least she has someone there. Not that we don't surround her with positive influences of all cultures anyway, but at least that connection is there with her biological family if she has any questions.
Yeah, and that's why it's never going to be a separation. I love that. It seems almost like a fairy tale, but it can happen, though.
But, it certainly can.
I was going to ask, though, if the child is at a certain age, maybe such as in their teens, because I have seen that on Good Morning America. I mean, I have seen on Good Day Atlanta, and they'll show children who are already teenagers. At that age, do they get to choose who they want for an adoptive parent, or it's not their decision at all?
oh, no, they don't get to decide. I'm like, you know, I somehow expect that my older biological daughter is going to be the one that says, I when she's 13, I want a different set of parents. But no, there's no, you know, they're both stuck with us. There's no going back, and, you know, we have every right as parents to embarrass them as we see fit, and no matter how we embarrass them, they are stuck with us. So there should be no need. Now, you know, I could see where that might happen in the, you know, foster care, you know, situation with an older child. They might, my understanding is if you were to adopt, say, a 14-year-old out of foster care, that they have, as you know, some input into who eventually adopts them, you know, because they're old enough at that point to say, I don't like these people. So, but not so in, you know, when you adopt a child from a newborn stage. Now they're stuck with you.
You are stuck. And that's a good thing about being a biological parent, because I know mine's is 8 right now. They're 8, so I'm figuring when they get older, they're going to probably be like, I want another family. No, we're stuck together.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I know that, you know, my youngest birth mom might seem really cool, but nope. You're stuck with me. But that's the other thing about open adoption, going back to what you were talking about earlier. I think if you were, you know, a child where you didn't know who your biological parents were, I'm sure I would sit for days and think that, you know, my biological parents were like the princess in a Russian castle or something, and, you know, like a football star. You know, your imagination, when you don't know, I think could build up a certain fantasy in the child's mind. Whereas if they know who these people are, well, then there's no mystery. They can't imagine that, you know, there's like this you know, other person out there that's so much better than you. They know that their biological parents are just like you, only human. So.
Exactly. And we're here to make mistakes and learn from them. Now, are there any grants out there for parents? Because how much does it normally cost if you do want to go into adoption?
So if you're looking at domestic, private, or agency adoption, I typically tell families that a good place to start is $25,000 to $30,000, which sounds astronomical, because if you were able to, you know, do it the old-fashioned way, you wouldn't have to worry about a price. But those fees go for attorneys. They go through for counseling of the expecting parents. They go through legal living expenses for the biological mother, and other fees associated with the adoption. You can certainly come across a fee of $40,000, $50,000, but I typically tell families if they've ever come to me with a budget that high, either save it for the second one, you know, let's cut that in half, and in 2 months after you adopt your first child, you can adopt again. I mean, I don't think I would ever see a situation where I would feel comfortable, you know, telling someone to spend $50,000 to adopt a child. I can't imagine. So, but you can, if you go through foster to adopt, it's going to be free, or, you know, just a couple of maybe thousand for the classes that you need to take. And if you find your own expecting parents, it's going to be a lot cheaper. It's probably going to be, you know, in the $10,000 to $15,000 range. But a family has to be comfortable with, your state laws have to allow you to advertise for an expecting mom, and you have to be comfortable receiving phone calls from people looking to place their children for adoption, and you have to be comfortable, you know, weeding out any potential scam artists that you may attract. But there are other ways other than advertising that you could find your own expecting mom. You could contact your church. You could, you know, send an email out and have those people email their friends. So it's like word of mouth that you're looking to adopt. I mean, so there are definitely safer ways to do it. But those are kind of the price ranges. Foster, if you do through the state, you're looking at free to a couple thousand. If you find your own expecting parents, you're looking at between 10 and 15. And then private and agency adoptions, typically I would say a safe budget would be 25 to 30. But you could certainly come in less than that. But, you know, it's better to be pleasantly surprised and come in less than having me tell you, oh, it'll be $20,000, and then it's, you know, higher than that. So I say prepare for the worst and, you know, hope for the best.
Exactly. That's how to do it. It's better to be prepared than to, when you get to that point, not be prepared at all. So, Marnie, you work at Mended Adoption. What is actually this?
It's Mended Hearts Adoption Consulting, and what I do is I help families navigate the domestic adoption process. So if a family is just starting adopting the adoption process, I would help connect them to, well, first we would work on education, and that would cover a lot of the topics we talked about today, but just in more depth. And then I would work with connecting them to a reputable home study provider in their area, or if they decided to go with a full service agency, you know, the home study provider would be connected with that agency. After that, we work together on a profile, and the profile is what's presented to expecting parents. That's how they choose the adoptive parents. They look at this beautiful book of photos and, you know, text of your life, and, you know, they say, oh, Joe likes to go hunting. Oh, I grew up hunting. Or, you know, Sally really likes going to jazz festivals, and that's something that they connect with. So you want to create a really nice profile that really portrays who you are as a couple or as a single person. And then after the profile, we sit down and I provide a list of agencies and attorneys that I've worked with that have had good feedback, and you decide who you're going to work with. You might decide to work with one agency, or you might spread it out and work with like three or four agencies and attorneys combined. And that's up to the families. It's up to their budget, what they're looking for. If they're a single parent, then they might only I might only provide them with certain attorneys and agencies' names. You know, I really individualize, you know, my service, so you're not getting a carbon copy list that I send to everyone, because what you need and what my previous client needed are most likely not going to be the same thing. So I really like to make sure that my families are going to be working with people that are going to appreciate their situation. And
yeah.
Then after the match, if you're in Florida and nearby, and, you know, the expecting parents nearby, and you get the call, if you want me at the hospital with you, I'm happy to do that. You know, I've been on the phone with clients at 6 o'clock in the morning. I've been on the phone with them at 10 o'clock at night. You know, it's kind of having someone in your corner, because if the agency or attorney got a phone call from an adoptive parent every time they were freaking out, no one would ever get anything done. So I'm there as your resource, your sounding board, to kind of talk you off the cliff when times get tough.
Oh, see, that's really good, because it's a hard process just to get through all that. I can't imagine, but I definitely sympathize. What if the birth mother does not want to place the child with the adoptive parents? Do they get compensated?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
Yes, ma'am. I was asking, what if the birth mother does not want to place the child with the adoptive parents? Do she get compensated?
So if an expecting mother matches with a family, and she's working with them with the intention of placing the child. If she needs living expenses, she can receive them. Again, this is for the state of Florida. And in the state of Florida, she's allowed living expenses for, like, rent or transportation, like taxis or buses, maternity clothes, food. It depends on, you know, what her current state of living is. It's not to put her in a better place. It's to keep her where she, you know, afloat. If she decides to parent, then the living expenses are at risk. So the likelihood that the parents, the adoptive parents, would recoup that money is unlikely. That's one of the risks of adoption. Now, there's some states that are better than others, such as, you know, Florida, it's a $5,000 cap, unless if it goes over, you have to go to court and prove that you actually need more money and for what reason. Whereas other states, I don't believe there is any limit whatsoever, and I've heard outrageous stories such as, like, you know, vacations and stuff like that, which is, to me, not what this is all about. But living expenses would be at risk if a mother chose to parent rather than place a child for adoption.
Okay. Now, can the birth parent change their mind once the consent is signed, Marty?
It depends on the state. In Florida, she is presented the papers 48 hours after, and when she signs, it's done. And that's why Florida is one of the more popular states to adopt in. Now, in some other states, there could be a five-day period where you could bring the child home. I've heard of a month. I don't know if there's a state that's over a month, but, you know, that's why people choose to adopt through Florida, because there's not that risk. I mean, I can't imagine being an adoptive family and having a child in my home for 5 days or, you know, a month, and then having her change her mind. I mean, my chest just tightens thinking about that. So I always try to make sure, primarily I work with agencies and attorneys in Florida, but if I'm ever venture outside of this area, I make sure that the laws are fairly similar to Florida's.
Hold on. That's right, because that's got to be hard for somebody to actually want to come back and say, oh, well, I changed my mind. It's like, no, there's no changing.
Yeah, no, and that's why you want to make sure you know what the laws are in your state before, you know, choosing a specific agency and how that will work.
Well, Marnie, I thank you for all this advice out there, and I hope someone who's going to and finding their hearts to really make sure you just do your research before you get into something. That's for anything. But if you don't mind, please give your contact information that they could find you at and maybe have any more questions for you.
Yeah, certainly. My name, again, is Marnie Pash, and I work with Mendit Hearts Adoption Consulting. And you can email me at menditheartsadoption@gmail.com, and my phone number is 804-548-5800.
Well, Marnie, I really appreciate you for being on the show and taking out the time with us to give us this advice. Every little bit always counts. Never know who might
Thank
have a question
you.
Out there. Thank you so much, and
Thank
you and your
you
family
so
have a blessing. You're welcome.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, everyone, I appreciate you for tuning in and listening today. That really means a lot to me. Thank you for staying on with me today. And don't forget to go to my Facebook fan page, The Bright Side with Technisha Chopson, D.C. from Africa. I really appreciate your comment. He wrote me, he said, I want you to know that we are proud of you, because even if no one does, I do. What you have to understand is that some of the most amazing people in the world were not perfect. They were scarred by suffering, hardships, losses, and imperfections. But when they recovered, they were stronger, wiser, and more loving and compassionate, which you know. Your life is going to get better and proper more than before if you believe, and you will be stronger and more at peace than ever. The truth is that life can be very difficult times. There can be a lot of pressure to keep it all together, to be smart and beautiful, to be so good and perfect, which you know. But I only want to remember again so that you become more strong. I know that sometimes we don't have it together at all. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we don't feel good or look our best. Sometimes things are not good at all and we feel miserable, lonely, or depressed. If you have lost your way and feel down, that feeling belongs to you. If you feel miserable, it's yours, and no one should take it away from you. Maybe things really aren't very good at all right now. Maybe we have good reasons to be depressed, and the last thing we need is someone telling us to be happy. But one thing you do need is at least the respect from us to let you sit with your valid feelings. You don't always need a cheerleader, but just someone to be a friend and acknowledge where you really are and how you really feel. Real problems can't be fixed with a motivational poster, a cute quote, or a pat on the back. While you are in your pain, it does not matter how intrinsically special you are or how beautiful life is or how precious each moment is. If we don't accept and respect our suffering, it isn't going anywhere. So we have to submit to our pain. Don't suppress yours. If you can sit with yours, listen to it, and respect yours, in time you will move through it. Pain is like a healing emotion, a fever. Allow yours to cleanse you and burn away what needs to die. A new and better you will grow from the ashes. The most important parts of our life is marked by pain. That is why I said that some of the most amazing people in the world were not perfect. They were also scarred by suffering, losses, and imperfections. I would love to see you more stronger and more at peace than ever before. So that means out of your suffering we emerge. Our struggles are really our only hope. Stay strong. I really appreciate you, Chopper Sun DC of Africa, for sending me that. Also, let's make sure we keep Captain Herb Emery in our hearts. He died this past weekend, and he was such a great contribution to Channel 2 Action News, WSB TV in Atlanta. He will be remembered, and no one will actually be able to replace that. So if you can, just go on the Facebook of WSB TV and give your condolences. And much love to the ones who stayed on with me today. And tomorrow I will be back on at 12 o'clock p.m. I know you missed me for 3 days, but that's just because I didn't have any guests. And I didn't want to bore you, but things are going to start changing. So, again, I really do appreciate you for tuning in. And much love and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.